population is vital to the cultural and economic character of our city. And whereas city code states that the city of Portland is committed to improving the lives of all its residents and strives to eliminate all forms of discrimination because such discrimination poses a threat to the health, safety, and welfare of our community. And whereas the city of Portland reaffirmed its commitment to human rights in March 2008 by establishing a Human Rights Commission whose work is guided by the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. And whereas on December 10, 1948, the United Nations adopted the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, a document that continues to be a source of inspiration for national and international efforts to promote and protect human rights and fundamental freedoms. And whereas an essential element of the protection of human rights is the widespread knowledge and understanding among people about what their rights are and how they can be defended. And whereas the United Nations has declared 2010 as the year of promoting true equality, embracing diversity, and ending discrimination. And whereas today we pay tribute to the extraordinary vision of this declaration's drafters and to the many human rights defenders around the world who have struggled to make their vision a reality, now therefore Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, hereby proclaims December 10th, 2009 to be Human Rights Day in Portland, and we encourage all residents to observe this day. Yay.
Today is Wednesday. It's 9:30, December 9th, 2009. The Portland City Council will come to order. Good morning, Sue.
Morning.
Can you please call the roll?
Leonard.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Adams.
Here. We have five people signed up. Communications. Can you please read the title for communications item number 1678?
Request of Guy Berliner to address council regarding TriMet and democracy. Is Guy here?
Yeah, come on forward. This is, the heat's been turned up. It's as under control as Sue can possibly get it under control.
We're going to try to turn the heat up just a little bit more here, if you don't mind.
No, we're having...
Rhetorically, but...
We're having heat problems.
Okay.
So welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Thank you, Sam. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Transit Riders Union. My name is Guy Berliner. And I want to address my remarks to the question. This will be, I know, somewhat alarming, but the question of have public officials in the city of Portland abandoned public transit? That seems like a strange question, I'm sure, in a green city like Portland. But let me draw attention to the original definition of, or the original etymology of the word abandon. Abandon comes from the expression in Old French, mettre abandon, which literally means to leave something out of your jurisdiction, to transfer it to the jurisdiction of another group, agency, individual, authority. And we've heard echoes of this sort of abandonment from folks on the city council and others who have said that they don't want to address the cutting of services, particularly very popular public amenities such as Fairless Square. We've seen TriMet use the same kind of argument, that it's out of their hands, that the shitstorm that is resulting, but...
This goes out on cable TV, so we got to keep our language...
Apologize, but the problems that we're facing because of the systematic defrauding of our, you know, economy by, you know, large-scale criminals has, you know, caused a conveyor belt of suffering, and that is affecting public services. But we're here to say to you that as transit riders and as advocates for transit riders, it's not acceptable for us to hear you tell us that you are simply going to be the conveyor belt for this misery. We know that the crimes, that the systematic debacle, the destruction of the economy due to systematic fraud in the, you know, mortgage lending industry and so on, we know that that has caused this situation, and we know that there are criminals who are responsible for this. But if you folks who are in positions of authority are simply going to tell us, oh, our hands are tied, there's no funding, it's not in our jurisdiction, et cetera, and you're going to simply be the conveyor belts for this misery, that's not acceptable. If you ask us, where is the funding going to come from to save these vital services, then the answer that we're going to have to give you is, you folks are the engineers in the control room for this conveyor belt. We're not the engineers. You're getting paid reasonably well to be the engineers. If a terrorist drops a bomb on a conveyor belt from a great height and we can't reach the terrorist, we need to stop the conveyor belt and maybe set it in reverse. You guys have the knowledge about how to do that, not us. So don't come to us, please, and tell us where is the money going to come from. You need to save these vital public services. You need to put your thinking caps on and get creative and not abandon public transit. And I guess that will be the body of my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Can you please read the title for Council of Communications, item number 1679?
Request of Jason Barber to address Council regarding TriMet and democracy.
Good morning, Mr. Barber. Welcome back. Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jason Barber. I would like to thank TriMet for making me incredibly late to this morning's meeting. Something a little different, just something I thought of that's kind of written from the perspective of Fairless Square. They call me stupid, a waste of money, Fairless Rail Zone, can you spare some change? That's not my name, that's not my name, that's not my name. They think I'm a riot, but I'm actually quiet. Fairless Rail Zone, can you spare some change? That's not my name, that's not my name, that's not my name. And not to steal anybody else's thunder this morning, but to roll right into it. Who killed Fairless Square? Not me, says Randy Leonard. It's not my jurisdiction, and it's more of an affliction. But I sure got a swell pick for county sheriff. Who killed Fairless Square? Not me, says Amanda Fritz. It's a waste of my time, and it's not worth a dime, and you'll still be a buck 90 short. Who killed Fairless Square? Not me, says Dan Saltzman. Peterson stays open, and it contributes to doping no matter what the original purpose was. Who killed Fairless Square? Not me, says Nick Fish. In 2004, I was asked, and I said I never ride, and we're going to leave broke Portlanders on the curbside. Who killed Fairless Square? Not me, says Sam Adams. It doesn't affect light rail, and I got a sale because I sure care about what goes on the CRC. Who killed Fairless Square? Not me, says Chris Humphreys. I killed James Chassie. And that says, we'll just leave it as that this morning. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time. Can you please read the title for Council of Communications, item number 1680?
Request of Xander Dunlap to address Council regarding TriMet, democracy, and anti-corruption. I don't believe that Xander's here.
Okay. Can you please read the title for Council of Communications, item number 1681.
Request of Julia Smedley to address Council regarding TriMet and democracy. Is Julia here?
Ms. No. Smedley? All right. Can you please read the title for Council of Communications, item number 1682?
Request of Lou Church to address Council regarding TriMet and democracy.
Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, Tim.
Welcome back.
In the spirit of international human rights, Transit Riders Union is addressing the human rights of transit riders in Portland in terms of global warming, air pollution, the wars for oil access and profit in the Middle East. Who killed Fairless Square? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, said George Pasador, chairman of the TriMet board, Wells Fargo president. I'm just here to collect classic cars, Maserati, Lamborghini, Mercedes-Benz, Humvee, Cadillac, Aston Martin, and number 7, that Volkswagen Bug. I keep next to my party room. For Fairless Square, I don't care. I'm just here to lower the boom. Who killed Fairless Square? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, said Bernie Bottomley, chairman of the Portland White People's Business Alliance, and God of Many Stones Idolatry. I wouldn't know a TriMet bus from a hole in the wall. I'm just here to make a buck. I don't really give a... Who killed Fairless Square? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, said the Oregonian editorial board, typing on their old typewriter. Trains are cool and buses suck. Transit riders, we just say good luck. Who killed Fairless Square? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, said John Charles from the Milton Friedman Policy Institute. It's hard to say. It's hard to tell. Fairless Square, go to hell. Who killed Fairless Square? Why and what's the reason for? We're here to save it, said TRU, Transit Riders Union. Don't believe TriMet's shuck and jive. It's just all a game to them. We may have to give it CPR. Try to keep Fairless Square alive. With Teflon Fred and these TriMet whores, Transit Riders have to say, no war, but class war. No war, but class war.
Thank you. All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. I'd like to return 1685 back to my office unless there are objections. So done. Any other items to pull from the consent agenda?
1686
is pulled from the consent agenda. Anything else? All right. Sue, can you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish. Salzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We're now going to take up the 9:30 time certain. Running just a few minutes late. Sue, can you please read the title for time certain item number 1683?
82nd Avenue Prostitution Advisory Committee Report.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of the council. In the summer of 2008, prostitution around 82nd Avenue was rampant. The city responded by funding treatment programs for prostitutes, increasing prostitution missions by the police bureau, and developing relationships with other agencies to coordinate services and oversight. The neighbors were a critical voice at the table, so last year the City Council voted to create the 82nd Avenue Prostitution Advisory Committee. I want to thank the committee, especially our co-chairs, for this report and for the work over the last year to create this report. The co-chairs are Brian Wong, who is a neighborhood resident who has put in countless hours on top of his family and job responsibilities, and the other co-chair is East Precinct Commander Mike Krebs. And I also want to thank Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel for being here today, and she will speak after the presentation. She is leading the county's efforts on human trafficking and prostitution and will offer a testimony after the report. I applaud the thoroughness of this report and want to note in particular the range and creativity of the recommendations. The committee studied best practices from across the country and have concluded that a safe house is the key piece to taking girls and women off the street. Commissioner McKeel has begun this work, has successfully involved Senator Ron Wyden, and together we are committed to making a safe house for those women a reality in the very near future. So I want to now at this point call up Commander Krebs and Brian Wong to present the report.
Actually, to make things more fluid, we're just going to have the rest of the panelists.
Oh, okay.
Move it back and forth.
Can we get the...
Well, good morning. I'm Mike Krebs, the commander of East Precinct. I'd like everyone to introduce themselves if they could real quick.
I'm Emmy Ritter, the clinical supervisor of the New Options for Women program.
I'm Denise Warren, a survivor.
I'm Brian Wong, I'm co-chair. And in real life, I'm a nurse at Portland Providence Medical Center. And I have two children of my own and my wife, who is actually working today.
J.R. Ujifusa, I'm a deputy district attorney for Multnomah County.
What I kind of put in perspective is that in the early spring of 2008, the prostitution problem along 82nd Avenue just exploded. And to kind of give you an example, I want to kind of read a quote. There's a thing called USA Sex Guide where some of the Johns go to and they blog on there to talk about their experience here in Portland. And you know, it's, as a precinct commander, it's very disheartening to read these kinds of things. And it actually gives me motivation, you know, to get out there and clean the problem up. So I'll read that real quick. This is what a blog on this guide said. This gentleman wrote, drove over to 82nd on Thursday night, late about 12 midnight. From Foster up to Stark, found a dozen or so, mixed bag of girls, four black, a couple Hispanic, and a bunch of whites. All sizes and shapes, little or no law enforcement presence. On the return trip, we saw maybe two dozen by then. Nice weather brings them out. When I left around 2, there were still 6 or so out looking. Lots of mongers or Johns, out also swooping in fast competition, was definitely out there. Girls should have made some money that night. And this is a blog dated May 17, 2008. And it just, You know, these people think they're going to come take over our city, and they're not. The next one is from a Portland Police Bureau police report, and this is from a prostituted woman. She actually told the officer, told me she came to Portland because Seattle PD had been making multiple prostitution arrests on Denny Way and Aurora Avenue, two well-known vice areas in Seattle, Washington. She said she heard she can make more money in Portland working the streets, and Portland doesn't do anything to stop the prostitution. She told me a lot of girls are coming to Portland from Seattle, Washington, for prostitution. So Portland was starting to get a name. And what ended up happening, you can probably see there's a picture up here, and this was in the Oregonian, showing that the prostitution acts were taking place right in front of young children and families on 82nd Avenue. It just came to a real boiling point. And so what happened, I think the big piece to all this is the citizens who live along 82nd Avenue. You have Montevilla Neighborhood Association, Madison South, Lentz, you have Palhurst Gilbert. They came forward and were just, you know, enough is enough. And I'll let Brian Wong speak about what they did. They saw this problem. They stepped up to the plate. And I can't say enough for the Neighborhood Association and the citizens involved here, but they've done an outstanding job. I'll turn it over to Brian and talk about some of the things that they did in response to this.
Good morning. You know, it's interesting. I think when we came here last year to create this council, I think the discussion, opening discussion item was Human Rights Day. So I find it interesting that here we are again. So there's a corollary between the two things here. But I find this picture real interesting because, I mean, this was out. This gentleman here had been charged with soliciting a 14-year-old girl and for $20. And so this, to me, just explains what we saw and just the fact that, you know, the sheer presence of it was so overwhelming. Because the Johns would meet these women on 82nd and they would go into the neighborhood to do what they're going to do. And this kind of created a wide range of emotions. You know, and a lot of it feels like anger, but a lot of it I think is an extension of frustration. And then also apathy setting in. And that's a real hard place to be because you feel like there's so much of it going on and it's so blatant that you can't do anything about it. But, you know, coming here and having worked together with these people for a year, you know, I'm highly encouraged what I see, and I feel like that there's some real good solutions out there. And, you know, in March when we had a warm spurt in March last year, and I had the windows, and I was woken to a noise of car doors opening and closing out on my street. So I went to go see what was going on, and it was shocked to see kind of like a, for lack of a better word, like a drive-through service of sorts occurring. And you know, when you kind of see that, you just don't know what to do. It's like, you know, you call the police officers, but you know, their capacity is limited. And when you see the same women coming and going, you know, it's a lot of frustration that leads up to that. But also with this photo of these kids, they're coming home from school and they're walking right through the scene there. And I think that's kind of telling, like it's so normalized that it's just part of the background, that they don't even see what's really going on there. And I just find that, because it seems like the natural instinct would be to walk around that scene instead of through it. And the businesses were also just as frustrated. And I'm going to point out McDonald's first, which is on 82nd Stark, because when the problem, that came like the one of the key points where it was like an open-air market in that parking lot. And we took the management staff to task, but they were just as frustrated as we were once we started talking to them. And actually, at one of the neighborhood association meetings where it got real heated, the owner manager of that particular store just, you know, threw up his hands and said, "We're doing all we can do." But in the Burgerville, when we talked to them, you know, they were having people go through the drive-through line. And so as you ordered a burger, there would be someone there trying to solicit themselves. And the Taylor Court Grocery, you know, his outside eating area was overtaken. And when we talked to him, he was frustrated and said, you know, the neighbors feel like that we're making money off this whole thing, and we're not. So they also felt the victimized just as well. And so in response, a lot of things happened. We created the foot patrols. There was a petition campaign that started up, and which was facilitated by Montevilla in Action. And then there was a couple forums. Save 82nd Avenue created a forum, which I think Randy Leonard was present at. And 400 people attended. And then a later one by Montevilla Neighborhood Association with about 150 people. It was more of a workshop, and we had a speaker, Melissa Farley, come up from San Francisco to speak. And then we had the Save Our Streets March. And I just think that just speaks to, you know, the neighborhoods, which is asking for help. And You guys, the law enforcement and the city council help support us, and we are extremely appreciative of that. So I'll turn this over to Commander Krebs here to speak about.
And what the Portland Police Bureau did is right away we dedicated four officers to work the prostitution on 82nd Avenue and also Sandy Boulevard. And those officers were working 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, you know, trying to suppress the activity. We also conducted weekly missions. We would go out and do decoy missions, both for using Johns and using decoy police officer, female police officer, to try to catch the Johns. So we try to hit it from all angles. One of the single biggest thing, I think, that really turned it around was Officer Heath Kula come up with an idea that if we could get these, both the Johns and the prostitutes, on probation and then have the judges post-conviction give them restrictions to stay off 82nd Avenue and Sandy Boulevard, we thought we might be able to have an impact. At that point, there was no PFZ, and we felt this might be a good idea. So it ended up working, you know, through a series of meetings and working with the courts and the judges and Department of Community Justice. There was a number of people we had to work through to get this up and going. And that played an integral part in allowing us to have some sanctions and also have a bite to put them into some kind of a treatment, because many people that are having difficulties like this, you know, they need to have a nudge to get into some kind of a treatment. So we felt this was a good plan, and it actually is working very nicely today. And the biggest piece of that is not just the police, it's all the other community partners. It's the citizens, it's the LifeWorks Northwest, and it's we meet weekly now. We all come together and discuss each week about the particular problems on 82nd Avenue and Sandy Boulevard. So I think it's that holistic approach, bringing everyone who has a piece of the pie, bring them together once a week and discuss what we can do. It's almost like a triage. I was talking earlier. It's almost like a group of medical professionals getting together to try to find out what is the diagnosis, first of all, and then what kind of a treatment do we give these individuals. And I think it's been very good to sit down and do that, and I can't say enough for the officers in LifeWorks Northwest, the FBI, just a number of individuals involved with this. Department of Community Justice is also involved. Kathleen Treb has been integral working with us to make this all happen. Now I'll turn it over to JR to talk about what the DA does. So he's also part of that weekly meeting.
Prior to this team being formed, this coordination team, I was working as a neighborhood district attorney out of East Precinct. So these forums I attended, I saw what was going on. I rode with officers on a pretty regular basis, and I saw the 82nd was, as they said, off the hook. It was a huge deal. There was a lot of prostitution going on, a lot of activity, and it was becoming more blatant, more visible to the public. At that time, the tools I had to use were probation and jail time as far as a prosecutor, building cases and sentencing individuals to probation or jail. There was no treatment option that I could use that was specific for prostitution. And the probationary terms were the standard probationary terms that anyone on bench probation would get, since prostitution is a misdemeanor. During that time, there was not a designated DA to overlook all of the cases in the county or in the city. If a crime or a prostitution arrest had happened in Northwest, a DA who was over that area would review that case and issue that case. If it happened in East, I would review it and issue it. If it happened in Southeast, someone else would review it and issue it. The change being that a dedicated DA was able to oversee every case that came into the system. Now, through the prostitution coordination team, I see every arrest that happens in the city, so that if there is movement between 82nd Avenue and Sandy and individuals moving somewhere else because they think that business is better, there's less law enforcement, I can speak to LifeWorks to see if there's any changes in what's going on there. I can speak to parole and probation to see if people have moved. I can speak to the community to see if they've seen a change. And I can speak to the officers to see if there's been a change there. The coordination team made a closer relationship for me with the other individuals who have interest in solving this problem, especially the community. Brian Wong is one individual. There are many other individuals that are in neighborhood organizations and community, as well as businesses, that I spoke with on a regular basis to try to find out what we could do to help. You know, LifeWorks was another great tool that all of us have used, and they have used us to try to focus on what the problems were and what the solution could be working together. It was anything from calling me to find out when a hearing was going to be so that they could provide support, to me asking them, hey, how is this individual doing, because I see that they have a detainer or I see that they have another case popping up. So those weekly Wednesday meetings were for all of us to sit around the table and to discuss the best way to handle each individual person, not as some theory, but as specific to an individual person, what their needs were, the problems they're having in their lives, and trying to address those problems. The change also came, as Commander Krebs talked about, with Heath Kula designating this program where there would be specific bench probation conditions so that we could make judges put on their bench probation specific problems or specific things that these individuals needed to address. And one of the most important things was treatment and LifeWorks. They're required to go to LifeWorks. They're required to complete their treatment or to go and do the certain amount of hours and meetings that LifeWorks required. So that is something we talk about on a regular basis with LifeWorks, is to see if they're doing their treatment, seeing what needs to be done, seeing how they're progressing in their treatment. And you'll hear from Denise later on. She was one of those individuals we spoke about that was in LifeWorks doing her treatment. The change in the probation also restricted these individuals from high vice areas. And if I'll let LifeWorks talk more about this, but if an individual is trying to change their lifestyle or trying to change something, one of the key factors is to take them away from that environment which keeps perpetuating that activity. And so what we tried to do in their probation is to restrict them from areas where that vice activity was going on so that they could focus on treatment and that the community could get a break and that we could change the way 82nd looked, and I think that's been working great.
Good morning. Again, I'm the clinical supervisor of the New Options for Women program with LifeWorks Northwest. Together with Terry, the recovery mentor, who is here, and Adriana, who's also here, our addiction specialist, we facilitate three groups 4 days a week, focusing on stabilization, recovery, and safety from prostitution, addiction, and trauma. Beyond the opportunity to come to group women and girls, meet one-on-one for therapy, addiction counseling, and case management based on their own individual needs. And I'm not really referring to the PowerPoint, but that's a nice background in terms of our information here. Our clients range from age 15 to 52 and are self-referred, agency-referred, and court-mandated. The average age for a girl to begin prostituting is age 13. Girls run away from home or foster homes are at increased risk for being picked up by a pimp who will groom them with intimacy and promises combined with entrapment and violence. This psychological abuse creates a trauma bond or Stockholm syndrome. Girls who get involved in prostituting are surviving an internal battle created from the charm and trauma of this life, which they have unfortunately been exposed to at such an vulnerable age. Many of the women we work with have been prostituting since early age and have turned to drugs and alcohol to cope with the increased danger and trauma, the stress of the life of the street, as well as a way to cope with the actual act of turning a trick, hitting a lick, or making a date. Some turn to prostitution to support their already established drug habits and addiction. Some turn to prostitution to support their homes or family. Most all have the common experience of a traumatic childhood, domestic violence, sexual abuse, poverty, and homelessness. What brings a girl, a woman, to seek the experience of selling her sex on 82nd Avenue, and what drives her to keep returning? As the wise woman who will be speaking next said to me yesterday, prostitution is not the symptom, it's the problem. So we at New Options for Women are working on both the symptom and the problem. But who sits before us in our offices, our group rooms, our cars, our jail or their jail cells, doctor's offices, courtrooms, NA meetings, treatment centers, shelters, and apartments are the women and girls looking to make some kind of change in their lives. She may go from treatment. She may show up high or belligerent. She may be well into recovery and need extra support. She may be early in recovery and need constant structure and activity. She may be dealing with nightmares and flashbacks or just need some help with job searching. We will meet her where she's at with no judgment and options. In this past year of developing this program, we have seen amazing successes. And I say this with hesitation because these are people's lives and we are judging them and in a very short expanse of time. Recovery from trauma while drastically changing a lifestyle, as JR said, changing exactly what they're doing every day, takes amazing effort and remarkable courage. We have seen women come in, many frustrated to be with us. They engage a bit and disappear for a while. They resurface and take a few more steps. They relapse and we are still there. Then they come to not only group, but to one-on-ones with Adriana and to begin building on their mentor plan with Terry. Terry may begin working with a woman to get her criminal record cleaned up, reinstate her ID, get appropriate medications, begin the habit of NA meetings, collect food boxes, get her bus passes, shop for job-appropriate clothing, and so on. The New Option team advocates for our clients with community partners and have worked to develop ongoing services when we assist a woman in safe housing. We've had the opportunity to work with one mandated woman who was not so happy to be with us, and she didn't hesitate to tell us, though she was pretty respectful in doing so. She shows up sporadically because her living situation is chaotic and unsafe. She abuses drugs and has a really hard time making it to appointments on time. Initially, she comes because she does not want to go to jail again. Then she comes because we aren't so bad. In fact, we're pretty cool. Then she's excited by a certain group activity that we're doing that incites her creativity. Then she works pretty intently with Terry, who, by the way, would pick this woman up for court, multiple early morning doctor's appointments, housing opportunities, and fun mentor activities such as swimming and the movies and getting their nails done and fun stuff like that. Somewhere along the line, this amazing woman has a spark of her own potential and beyond the chasing drugs and dates. Somewhere, New Options has become not only a mandated obligation, but an avenue to her own life options. She's about to move into safe and sober housing. She's begun getting drug-free through Suboxone, a medication treatment. And this has been a trying journey, not without hardship, successful advocacy, and perseverance. She made every appointment on time. She did everything she had to do, despite her unsafe living situation, and she kept her goals in mind, with Terry standing next to her. This one example of wraparound service we offer at New Options and the collaborations with community partners it takes to facilitate lasting change, including working with the police and the DA and the community. I believe we have proven to be open to each woman's recovery as well as their relapse. I believe that we can be reliable to be consistent structure they can come to when they're ready again and again and again and again. On this note, I would like to introduce Denise, who told us one of the first times we met her that she was not going to stop doing what she was doing.
Hi, good morning. My name is Denise, and I just
Denise,
wanna...
do you want to move a little closer to the
okay,
microphone?
I just want to begin by stating that for the last 6 years, I had been strictly on 82nd, walking up and down the street 365 days a year. I had made $148,000. For the first 4 years, I had a pimp. I was, it wasn't a pretty sight. And then then let me just stay a little bit here. Hi, my name is Denise, and I am here to give testimony. I was present on the street during the prostitution free zones, and also lived on the street and worked 82nd during the time when no consequences were given. So in the beginning, when prostitution free zone first came out, you would get a criminal trespass for being on the street. This is before these nice people got together and figured out a solution. So we're talking about probably about 6 years ago. They still had the drug-free zones downtown. And any time you would just be crossing the street, going to the store, you lived, worked, used in the same area, you would get arrested at any given time. Then an officer told me there would be a program available to help me with whatever means necessary to do something about whatever issues brought me on the street. With constant pressure from law enforcement, it became impossible for me to work on a daily basis. When I first got to LifeWorks, I was broken down and loaded, but I knew I needed to make a change. LifeWorks picked me up from jail and took me back to their office and started a schedule of classes and therapy to address some of the issues that were leading to me on the street. I sought their program out while I was incarcerated. They came to pick me up. I think their program just began. There was the officer picked me up and told me there would be a program that was going to help me figure out what my issues were on the street. So I was being stopped on a daily basis. So once my life was, you know, as hectic free as I thought it was, now I'm in constant contact with, come on, Denise, let me take you home. We've got to figure out what's going on with you. And on a daily basis, there was no. The recovery mentor had dropped me off at the Dope House after I went to their LifeWorks office. The ladies were so nice. They came to see me with smiles. They just wanted to know what I needed to do, and I didn't even know what I needed to do for myself because I was doing what I always had done. I continued to practice my self-destructive behavior. The police continued to stop me and ask if I was making my LifeWork appointments. I had an opportunity at LifeWorks to look at the core issues that led me to my path. Each time I had left, I had nowhere but once again to go to the unsafe situations. With new procedures, my arrests were no longer book and release. I was now looking at probation for my misdemeanor prostitution cases, along with the pressure from the court and the police contact on the street. I was put on a treatment waiting list, and I have been there. I've been in residential treatment for 8 months. I have not used, working on the issues, and LifeWorks came to see me inside treatment to continue therapy and hasn't let me go. So yeah, everybody played a key part in it. JR, Neighborhood Association, which was my neighborhood, which is kind of like a coincidental that that we're working together on this issue. So I speak on behalf of my sisters on the streets, the people that I know, the Prostitution Awareness Program. This isn't really something that we want our kids to go. It's not the most glamorous lifestyle. And it took a long time to make this change. And on behalf of my family, I'm lucky to be alive. I thank the officers that were involved on a daily basis in believing me before I could believe in myself, although at the time I didn't think about it. And I thank Emmy for the therapy given to look at the real issues that were going on. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Denise, can I ask you?
Could you raise the lights?
Can I ask you?
Or did you have more?
We have just a little bit more.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
But, you know, that the thing is that I think, as Denise is like, you know, there was coordination and options available, and I think that's like a big piece of the pie here. And this is off the same website that Krebs read earlier, and this is kind of like what is now they're having a hard time finding women to victimize, like Denise. And I feel real unheartened by that. I think that as we coordinate, I think the results will only get better. Some of the requests that we're looking for is
that... Read that, Brian.
Huh?
I'd like to read this if I could.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I think is important, and, you know, before the prostitution coordination team, before the prostitution advisory committee, 82nd Avenue was mostly a police problem. We'd go out there, we'd cuff people and take them to jail. It'd be a vicious cycle. But I think with the current program we have now, we have everybody involved. I think that everybody has empathy. I think that that's probably the biggest piece. If you asked me 20 years ago as a brand new police officer, my idea would be let's arrest them all. But I tell you right now, we need this overall approach. We need the citizens. We need LifeWorks Northwest. We need the judges to be involved. We need police officers. And this is the police officers I've selected to work on this particular project have a lot of empathy. These individuals are committed not only to making the neighborhood nice, but also improving people's lives. These officers have big hearts, and each and every day they go out and work on this place. So it's kind of they've taken it upon themselves to be the ownership by the community, ownership by people like Denise, LifeWorks Northwest, and the judges. And most recently, October 27th of 2009, on this same blog, John writes, "A year ago, you could count on finding 3 to 15 nice streetwalkers on 82nd Avenue. Now you're lucky if you find one, if you take two trips. Where have all the flowers gone? So many of them I used to see multiple times a week. Now I don't even see them anywhere. I used to cruise Sandy from Kmart to Safeway, sometimes as far as Burnside. Nowadays, nada, nothing, Zippo. Cruise Northwest over by Fred Meyer and still drawing blanks." So I think our approach is working. And one thing I know that Mayor Adams had mentioned when we were here a year ago, about worrying about displacement. And that has happened somewhat, but what happened is Central Precinct saw some displacement along West Burnside. And what we've done, we've brought in two officers from Central Precinct who are now part of the prostitution coordination team. And so they come to our meetings. And also, too, if we start seeing an individual moving to West Burnside, we can go back to the judge. JR can petition the judge to put additional restrictions on. And so when that person's seeing on West Burnside, then an officer who has the authority to place a court detainer on these individuals can do that. So there, you really can't escape this. And I think it's more effective than the prostitution free zone. And the reason why is that we can keep modifying this thing, and it's post-conviction. I think that was one of the biggest concerns about the prostitution free zone is it was pre-conviction, where this is post-conviction, and it's seen by a judge. So, you know, that's just kind of my two cents.
Do we lights up? Yeah, just bring the lights up. And I don't know if we want to, if you guys want to ask questions, or do you want to go through our recommendations, or
why don't you run through your recommendations, and we'll
okay.
Questions.
Okay. So I'll just kind of go through some of our recommendations, and we worked really long and hard on this because, you know, as a citizen along 82nd, as a taxpayer, you know, I just want to make sure our funds are directed right, and I want to make sure that we're actually meeting the needs of everybody because, you know, the neighborhood, you know, when they see something going on, they need. Who do you call? Well, you call the police because they're the only ones that will show up and run to a lot of situations that a lot of people run away from. But you also need to meet the needs of the women walking along the streets because if you're not meeting their needs, you're not meeting anybody's needs. And so as the needs increase, we're going to be we're asking for increased funding from the county and the city to help LifeWorks Northwest meet the needs of these women. And those costs are yet to be determined, I think, right now. You know, they've been going since January. And then also the long-term dedicated funding of the prostitution coordinating police officers in the DA's office. Because right now, I think things the officers are pulled off their regular shift assignments, and they're a set team. But, you know, we're afraid it's like if as priority shift, and, you know, they may that, you know, they may be directed somewhere else. And so until things are really under control and the environment has changed, we just feel like that we need to make sure those officers are funded. And then I must admit, as far as public housing is concerned, and I think I can speak for the rest of the people up here, I really have a dearth of knowledge. I really don't understand how the whole process works. And so what we're asking for is to help to have housing expertise of some sort from either the officers or the correct committees to come help us determine the best housing needs and how to best come up with the funds and stuff like that and the policies. And a temporary housing solution would be like the YWCA for 10 beds, and that would have a yearly cost of $50,000. And I think, as alluded earlier, there is some inpatient rehab that is occurring, but we would like to have that kind of structured so those women can help support each other and they're not off in different rehab settings. And then one of the big keys is, as JR can allude to, is when we there's a lack of public awareness of what really is going on with prostitution. A lot of people think it's a victimless crime. It's far from victimless crime. Not only is there a real person being victimized, but there's like the neighborhood and the businesses. And I mean, I think when there's prostitution occurring in an area, everyone in that area, and I think throughout the city, is a victim of that because of what it takes to get someone to exit. So we're asking to help draft a public awareness campaign. And there is pending legislation by Senator Ron Wyden, and we're asking for the city and the county, and I think Diane McKeel is already working with Senator Ryden's office, but to help partner and to make sure to help get that legislation to go through. And then the Multnomah County is also developing a John School, and we're asking the city to help support that. And then as the pieces come together, I think one of the key things is to evaluate and see how effective the services are and make sure we have the right services there. So and when we were going through the research to put together information to figure out what to do, there's a lot of information about a lot of research that it takes of what it takes to create a prostituted individual, but there is really not, there's very little information, almost none, of what it takes to help someone exit prostitution. And I think we need to create that data. Because I think really we put the city of Portland really out there on the forefront in the map, because if we actually do all the stuff and we put the data together, we'll be probably one of the first ones to do it. And I think that would be a great, I think that's very exciting to do that. And we didn't really talk about it a whole lot, but it's in the report, but there's a fit to the street environment and how prostitution is supported. You know, if there's a certain speed limits, there's the sidewalks going right up to the street, lack of a buffer zone, there's lots of traffic stops, there's the TriMet stops. All these pieces fit together to create, that help support prostitution, because then you have a reason for someone to be loitering. You can have the person go up to the window and engage. The traffic speed is not too fast enough so they can actually shop, for lack of a better word. So one of the things we're asking for as a long term is, like, if there could be a subgroup or someone like an interbureau task force like setting to create the changes to in the street environment to suppress, because it only will come back to certain areas. And so, like, Northwest Burnside is actually another perfect fit. You've got the same structures there. And then there's a few others. There's the teach-in and dental care and advocate, and as well as expansion of opiate recovery formulary as well. I don't know if anybody else wanted to add anything.
The only thing I would add is in our group on Monday, we talked about this, and many of the group members, we sort of created our own little advocacy moment for an hour and a half there, and they were very excited about housing and supportive housing and having opportunities for jobs and new lives, but realizing that it needed to be wrapped around and taken care of in that way. So just as a voice from all the women that I got to spend time with on Monday.
Well, Denise, I just want to start our recognition with you and your first congratulations on all the great work that you're doing for yourself and in turn for others and being here today. It's really inspiring, and you did a fantastic job.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet.
Questions or questions?
I have a question, if I could, to Emmy. I got a briefing the other day on some of the housing issues, and what we're going to do coming out of this report is meet one of your requests in the report, which is pull together the city and the county people that have a piece of the housing and service delivery and kind of figure out what's the existing system and how might it be enhanced. The timing is good because we're going to our budget cycle, and we also have some RFPs coming up. But I think we first have to figure out who's doing what.
Right.
And this also is helpful because in terms of homeless services, we're beginning to question some of the jurisdictional lines that exist between county and city anyway. So this is like a test case of who's doing what and do some of those lines make sense? Do the old jurisdictional lines make sense? But the thing I wanted to ask you was, in my briefing, I was told that in terms of where the housing is located, there was some concern about the housing being downtown. And could you speak to that?
Downtown, and maybe Denise can speak to this as well, but downtown has a level of having easy access to drugs and alcohol and also prostitution activity. So there's a bit of danger downtown. There is access for TriMet. There is access for services. So it can play in both, and I think Denise can also speak more on that.
Because it doesn't matter where you are. If you have one small seed of willingness, then this will work. I'd like to just state, and this is coming from an honest, I have been drug-free for 8 months, 3 weeks, and in prostitution is more difficult to give up than the drugs are. This is the first time I've had any clean time in 6 years. I have been arrested since I've been in treatment for being on 82nd. I am banned until 2011. So to address the problem, I think Central City takes care of a lot of issues when it comes to people. We're just kind of like focusing on a narrow channel of prostitution and involvement with the city. At least people care enough about us. Because when nobody cared, nobody saw us. I mean, there was a lot of times when, you know, things weren't working out and people were hurting people out there. So we're just looking for people who are actually willing to go to LifeWorks and stay in some safe housing.
It would have to be wrapped around really supportive housing. I think that the area of the Y is a safe area, and if it had some good structure and some good supports around, I think it is possible. However, there are risks in downtown, yeah.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Thank you all,
yeah.
All very, very much.
I just wanted to add my thanks to each one of you for really coming together as a community and making this a success. This is a success story, and it's going to require eternal vigilance to keep it a success story. But, you know, when neighbors, police, district attorney, social services come together out of, out of compassion, I think we're all benefiting from this. And Denise, you're a great success story, and we're all going to be rooting for you. So just once again, thanks to all of you. I also wanted to recognize Commander Krebs. Commander Krebs will be moving to be commander of the Detectives Division. So we want to thank you for your long service at East Precinct. You've definitely made a difference there.
Thank you.
And we have one more. We have Commissioner Diane McKeel we need to bring up, too.
Commissioner Leonard has.
Oh, okay.
Denise, I wanted to ask you about the first, thank you for coming as well. I appreciated what you had to say. So when you referenced when the prostitution free zones were in existence, you would be cited for criminal trespass. If you violated that citation, were you cited and released again, or did you go to jail?
I believe that Sergeant Graham was on the force then, and it wasn't really a solution for prostitution. You would be booked, taken into jail, and then released and given a criminal trespass. And now they have UPPAs, which is unauthorized prostitution, unlawful prostitution activity. You would get just a whole different case. Criminal trespass was what we got in the beginning.
But did it deter you from working? It
didn't. No.
Okay.
My pimp used to tell me the police are just doing their job. You just got to do yours.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
And thanks, Brian Wong, for being an outstanding neighbor.
No citizen. Problem.
Thank you, Mr. Wong.
So, I'm sorry. There's many people we want to thank. We have on the last slide here, but there's a lot of other neighborhoods. People. And also, I wanted to make a motion. I was wondering if we can keep Commander Krebs over at East Precinct.
So I want to divide up now County Commissioner Diane McKeel. She has been a leader in the effort to set up a safe house for women who desire to get out of the business of prostitution. She's had some great conversations with Senator Wyden, and we thought we would just invite her to update us on those activities or anything else you wish to say, Commissioner McKeel.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for inviting me here today to discuss my office's efforts around eradicating domestic human trafficking. And as you can see from the group before you, this is a true partnership, and that's how we look at it as working with the partners out there. We first talked to Senator Ron Wyden's office back in August about the severity of the problem of domestic human trafficking in our area. Joel Shapiro from his office followed up in amazing speed. Within months, not only had their offices interviewed many of our frontline law enforcement office officials who deal with these victims every day, but also had a proposal for federal legislation. This legislation will establish a grant program for 6 safe shelter pilot projects. The funding will be up to $2.5 million, renewable for up to 3 years. In the meantime, the county is looking for ways to get a head start on establishing shelter with wraparound services. We will be releasing a request for proposals to identify a community partner to work with us in creating a program and a space that will help these girls. Provided the state budget picture remains the same, there will be a program offer from our Department of County Human Services for 10 to 15 beds. In addition to the efforts to establish safe housing here in Oregon, we are also looking at reestablishing a John School in Multnomah County. It is important to take on the issue from every angle, especially demand. Multnomah County has attempted a John School program twice before, but for various reasons didn't succeed. Currently, there are over 45 successful schools across the nation, with the longest running program in San Francisco. We are working with the Portland Police Bureau, the District Attorney, and other community partners. We hope to have the program up and running early next year. Another key element to these efforts is generating awareness. When the average entry age into prostitution is 12 to 14 years old, it is a great myth that prostitution is a victimless crime. Representative Brent Barton will be sponsoring state legislation in the February special session that provides a mechanism for establishments that sell alcohol to post the National Human Trafficking Hotline. This will all be done at no cost to the state. The hotline is run by the nonprofit Polaris Project. Their call center is operational 24/7 and in 6 different languages. Since they opened 2 years ago, they have received over 13,000 calls and have seen several tips through to prosecution. The Polaris Project will provide the signage, and the data they will collect will be directed back to local law enforcement. We have also had conversations with the Oregon Department of Transportation and will be posting signs with the hotline number in rest areas beginning the first of the year. We are also working with Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian to look for additional posting areas and next steps for legislation. Finally, we are exploring a partnership with the Caldera Project and Comcast to create and air public service announcements in the Tri-County area. I would like to commend Commissioner Salzman, Commander Krebs, Brian Wong, and the rest of the 82nd Avenue Prostitution Advisory Council for all their work. It is inspiring to see people transform their passion for their neighborhood into action, and it is an honor to help support their efforts. Thank you for your work, dedication, and thoughtfulness. I hope we can continue to work together on this important issue. We hope the city will continue to be a strong partner and to continue to collaborate with the county on these initiatives to fight the sexual exploitation of our youth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you.
So that completes the invited testimony. I think there might be some people signed up.
How many are signed
up? We have 6 people signed up.
Okay.
Would you come up 3 at a time? Emmy Koyama, Jenny McGibbon, and Crystal Tenty first.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will count down from 3 minutes. Hi. Go ahead.
This chair is just slides all the way.
My name's Crystal Tenty. I'm with the Portland Women's Crisis Line.
Amy Koyama.
I'm Jenny McGibbon, and I'm with the Sex Workers Outreach Coalition.
So can I start?
Please do.
Hello, my name is Amy Koyama. I am part of the Sex Workers Outreach Coalition, a network of social service providers and others concerned with the safety, dignity, and diversity of needs of those working in the sex industry or sex trade. Many of us come from social work or public health backgrounds, bringing together knowledge and expertise and experiences from many social service agencies that directly serve this population. Some of us also come from personal history in prostitution or doing other kind of sex work. We're united in our commitment to end violence against and exploitation of women, men, and children within the sex industry and beyond. We appreciate the city's continued concern for the women and the work the LifeWorks North West is doing for them. Today, we're here to present the suggested principles for the city's response to the problem related to prostitution. We're asking the City Council to incorporate these principles into the 82nd Avenue Prostitution Advisory Committee's recommendations as the city explores its plan to address problems associated with prostitution. We're joined by Portland Women's Crisis Line, Outside In, Native American Youth and Family Center, and Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, as you see in the packet that has the support letters. We hope that this will be the beginning of our greater involvement with the city's effort to address the root causes of prostitution on the 82nd Avenue, as the former mayor, Tom Potter, stated last year in a press conference. Next speaker, Jenny, is going to give a brief summary of the suggested principles. You have a full version on your hand. And then Crystal will talk about address specifically on specific area within that proposal. And also, I'd like to... Since I have one more minute, I'd like to read a very short and simple poem called Degrade. Degradation is not trading sex for money. but it is exchange of Social Security number for food. Degradation is not stripping away men's dress, but it is not having